Welcome to another super amazing installment of You're Doing It Wrong with me, Kelly Vero. I'm a designer of games and I have been known to dabble occasionally in level design, which is what I want to talk about this week. But before I do, I want to apologise for there not being a You're Doing It Wrong last week, and that's simply because I was so sick with a cold. Yes, this is Switzerland. In the games industry, as a level designer, you'll be expected to use level design tools and be able to prototype really quickly to make something that either works and that is used in the final stages of the game design or the game development, or something that you can throw away really quickly. And being able to throw away something really quickly is very important if you're a game designer. You don't want to hang on to ideas that aren't going to work. And so you might use an in-house tool which allows you to quickly prototype a level or an experience for the team to play and see whether it works. But to get to that point, where do we start? Usually where you might start if you're entering the game design profession in the video games industry. Most people that I've ever worked with, and myself included, have at one time or another been some form of designer. And that means either a level designer or a combat designer or a missions designer. So if you want to be a game designer, this is usually the avenue that you will go down. It's kind of like taking something really massive and then breaking that thing down into little segments. And then from those little segments, you work on each fragment or segment of the pie or the orange, if we're talking about game design. And then with other level designers, you feed that information into the senior or the lead game designer, and together you come up with a two-way street of design. And that comes from your big picture experience, maybe something that you've studied, and your actual practicable experience, so the little fragments of stage, combat, mission, or level that you've worked on. That's how we do it in the games industry. But today I want to talk about level design because it's, as usual, as with everything that I talk about every single week, it's a super vital component in your toolkit. But it is super amazing because with one small fragment of a user experience within an overall game design, you can create an entire vibe, theme, and feel. So last week I talked about the overall user experience and starting to prototype and put together a very basic walkthrough or playthrough of the game using either a grid or just walking your finger through the main core loop or golden path. I like to start with vision. So if you're building a level design, you need to have an idea of the game's overall vision in mind first of all. So if you're building Cyberpunk, for example, the last thing that you want to be doing is building levels that are based on Jane Austen's romantic version of England or something like a bowling green in Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. No, that's not a good way to go. You've got to keep consistent within the theme and the vision of what the game design is going to be. What I personally like to do is sit down with the designer and find out what they have in mind. When I sit down with designers, they're very visual people, and if it's something that you want to go into as a profession, you've got to be able to communicate on three really important levels. You've got to be able to communicate on an understandable level, so you've got to be able to verbally communicate, because that helps you get buy-in from people. But an additional skill is to be able to work on a kinesthetic level. So that's a level that's more visceral, or as Boris Johnson said last week in Parliament, visceral. And a visceral level is being able to not do or combine the final level, which is visual. A visual communicator is somebody who really can only communicate in pictures. If you're working on a kinesthetic level, then you're combining all of levels of verbal communication and visual communication to really get that buy-in from the rest of your team. So if you're a kinesthetic communicator, then you're probably pretty amazing and you should get hired straight away. It is a skill that you can learn, however, so do spend some time to think about how else you can convince or develop your idea to people who might be interested in what it is that you have on offer. When I sit down with designers, often what we do is we get a whiteboard together and we think about this particular level and how we want to develop it. To give an example, when I worked on Transformers Universe, four of us, that's myself, who is the narrative designer, the lead designer, the senior level designer, and a level designer, we piled into a room together and we decided that we weren't going to leave the room until we designed what it looks like. The best thing to do with a level is not start off with the entire thing. It's always a really good idea to look at what is in each map square. So if your lead designer says to you, we are going to do 2x2, so that's a 2x2 map square, 4x4. In the case of games such as that have multi-user dungeons, they might be 4x4 map squares. They cover a vast amount. And I like to think that 1x1 is a kilometer. And we often use that measurement in the games industry to really define what happens for the player within that area. So let's say for the sake of argument, on Transformers Universe, we did a 2x2 map square. So we've got two map squares going across and two map squares going down. What we need to make sure is that we put the player slap bang in the heart of the action. So if they were parachuted into this map square, what direction would they go in? And where would they best get all of the items, experiences, combat, rewards, rare drops, loot? Where would they get all of that stuff? So I always squeeze that down further. And in a 2x2 map square, I look at one map square. And I use that as the starting point. And because we're in Western Europe or in the Western Hemisphere, of course I'm going to use the left-hand side map square. If you can comfortably design or describe what happens in each map square, in each square, you've basically won at designing. So let's have a go. What did we do in Transformers Universe? Well, we scribbled. We started off by drawing a bunch of stuff that we liked and that we thought would fit the theme. And then what we did was we reverted that information into words. We brainstormed what these things could be. So as part of a small section of the campaign mission, we broke the whiteboard into the same amount of map squares, 2x2. And inside, we wrote inside each map square what we wanted to see within that map square. So to give you an example, on one of our levels, we had a giant array. So this array was full of satellite dishes and radio telescopes and the type of thing that you might see around CERN or in the UK in Jodrell Bank or that amazing place in Peru. And there's another amazing place over towards the Pacific Ocean. It's just a complete field or an array of radio telescopes and what look like satellite dishes, but they're constantly moving around, you know? So we had that, and that formed an integral part of the combat mission. So what we wanted to do around that, by taking experiences from those places in Peru, in the UK, in Switzerland, and so on, we knew that we needed to have it in an area where there was woodland, where there was thicket, where it was difficult in places to navigate and maneuver outside of the array itself, and that the pathway from point A to point B, which as you know is something I'm hugely passionate about, we were able to put in a sort of meandering path or a point with which the player could enter and exit freely. Because remember, if we're talking about the player, we can never put a barrier to entry into the game for a player. Whether we're creating Grand Theft Auto or whether we're making Unfinished Swan. Everybody should have a fair and open experience, almost to the point of ambivalence, where the player does not feel like they're being limited or gated in any way from point to point. So we've started to build our map squares, and we've brainstormed the types of things that we want to put in there. Might be an old rickety lodge that's got no roof, or it could be a yesterday's burnt out fire pit. There could be feral dogs hanging around occasionally, but there definitely is a lot of greenery, very sort of clay bedded dirt paths, bits of gravel, maybe rocks, you know, because these arrays are often placed on high points. And so the array itself, we wanted it to act like a base. So if we wanted to do a capture the flag type mission, for instance, we could use the array to our advantage by turning it into an element of the gameplay. So on a 2x2 map, how do those words and that scribble at the beginning become anything? If you're a level designer, or a designer generally, you have to have vision. You've got to hold the vision of what everybody is agreed on as a collective for the game, but you've also got to hold the individual vision. So to do that, you have to be not artistic, because I think that's probably the wrong word to use. It does put a lot of people off and provide a barrier to entry. I certainly don't consider myself to be artistic in the slightest, but there has to be an organisation of the scribble and the words into the vision and the message. And so you might want to draw either top down or bottom up what you see this information looking like. Now, I'm a very much top-down person. When I draw level designs, I draw everything as if I'm flying over the top of it, looking down at what I can see, whether it's a radio telescope array or whether it's a dense, thick forest. And what I'm looking for is a way to be able to bring together the words and the scribble. So the idea of how the player gets into the game doesn't come about from words. It comes about from drawing a path. And remember how in the previous episode of You're Doing It Wrong, we talked about the user experience and the core loop and the golden path where the player has the most positive experience through the game. That's what I'm looking to do as a level designer. I want to be able to show something which is both positive and the best case scenario. Then I leave it to the developers and the level designers to pull that apart and put it back together. So top down or bottom up, the choice is absolutely yours. But make sure that you always lean upon and rely upon the information that you guys have agreed on collectively. Now, in the early days of video games, a single programmer would create the maps and layouts for the game. And it was a discipline or a profession that was dedicated solely to level design. It didn't exist, it was part of programming. So early games often featured a level system of ascending difficulty as opposed to a progression of storyline. However, over the course of the last few years and with the advent of games such as World of Warcraft or Halo, or even games like Tomb Raider, and more recently games such as Uncharted, and even games like Journey and Flower, they follow a balanced system of level editing. In Flower, for example, as you move from area to area, you're actually moving from level design to level design, and these have all been designed quite carefully. My designer of the week last week, incidentally, is a guy called Hamatani, and he works for From Software, who make Dark Souls, etc. And those guys don't refer to level designers as level designers at all. Those guys are called planners. And so planning each area is a craft in and of itself. It isn't enough these days to have a level system of ascending difficulty. These days, it's really important that you pack that into an experience. And we do have text-based games or multi-user dungeons to thank for that. Mods, if you remember those from back in the early days of Steam, especially Garry's Mod, that was an opportunity, and more recently in Minecraft, for users to create new paths, rooms, new equipment, new actions, often using the game interface itself. Just as a little side note, Doom from 1993 and Doom 2 from 1994 were two of the first games to attract a focused game modding activity, and many level files were made for them. One of the reasons was a clear separation between the level files and the game engine itself. Half-Life, Quake 3, and many other games have had notable mapping tools and communities focusing on user-generated content. So if you're a modder, you love Minecraft, or you've played games like Doom, Doom 2, Half-Life and Quake, then maybe level design is for you. Recently, I've been working on a game design with a startup based in Zurich. And what these guys are doing is they're building something called a vertical slice. I'll talk about this in future editions of You're Doing It Wrong. But just to say that when you're making a vertical slice, effectively what you're showing is a level or one mission or one playthrough within a prototype. And this prototype is a polished but rough style of user interface, design, characterization, character models, and basically all key art, along with narrative, voiceover, maybe music, to a semi-polished level. And it should be something that you can play. And if you play it often as a player, you can say, wow, this is really great, I'm super looking forward to the finished product. Or you can feedback to the developer and designer and say, look, here's some room for improvement. This is exactly how game development should work. It's pointless to come up with an idea for a game and then design the whole thing completely, go to soft launch, wait for feedback. I mean, critique, good or bad, can affect a designer and a team as a whole. Sometimes it's better just to start with something small, get that small thing working, and then grow that into something massive. But do remember, the most important thing is being able to hold the vision. As a lead game designer myself, it's been very important for me in the past to be able to communicate the vision of the team, the vision and theme of the game, and the big picture without having to make it all first. So a level designer is almost an intrinsic component of game design. And if you can learn how to make things on a small scale, then, as I said earlier, you've won at game design. Next week, I'll be talking a little bit more about level design in way more detail. We'll be talking about players, environments, and exploration. So pin your ears back and make sure that you take notes. Don't forget to give me some feedback of what you think about this episode, and I look forward to talking to you all next week. Until then, keep making and keep playing.
Thank you for listening. You can tweet Kelly at Electric Geisha. Follow Your Doing It Wrong podcast where all good pods are casted. Email Kelly at doingitwrongpod@gmail.com.